Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Neiman Novetzky discusses Tatzria Metzora. Neiman Novetzky is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Neiman Novetzky.
Thank you, Larry. This week's Parsha, Tatzria Metzora, focuses on what many think of as a quite esoteric topic. Laws relating to Tum'ah and Tahara, to purity and impurity. It includes laws of the Mitzorah, the leper, the Zav, a man who has an emission, the Nida, a woman who is in her menstruation cycle. But it starts with the laws of a Yoledet, the laws of a woman who has just given birth. And it is this that we will focus on during this year. The verses tell us, Isha ki tezriya v'yalda zachar, a woman who bears seed and gives birth to a male, v'tem'a shiv'at yamim, she shall be impure for 7 days. If she gives birth to a female, she's impure for 14 days. During this period, she's not allowed into the temple, nor is she allowed to have relations with her husband. This brief period is followed by another period of purification. 30 yom u'shloshet yamim teshev b'dmei tahara b'chol kodesh lo tiga v'el hamikdash lo tavo. For a male, if she gives birth to a male, she has a 33-day period of purification in which time she's allowed to her husband, but not allowed into the temple. If she gives birth to a female, then that period is extended double, and for 66 days, she has this purification process. At the end of the period, uvimlot yamei tahara, she then has to go and bring two korbanot, two sacrifices, an olah and a chatat, a burnt offering and a sin offering. Of all of the examples of laws of impurity that we find in our parsha, to some extent, the laws of the yoledet, the laws of the woman who has given birth, is the most bewildering. Because we wonder, why at all is she included in this category of tumah? What makes her impure? We normally associate impurity with something negative, yet a woman who has just born a child has done something very positive. She's just undergone the most positive experience of life. In addition, why in the world, at the end of the process, does she have to give a chatat? Does she have to give a sin offering? What sin has she done? She's just given birth. She's just given forth life. She hasn't sinned. So how do we understand this whole concept of the yoledet being something that is a source of tumah, of impurity, and being something that leads you to have to bring a sin offering? Let's start with the question of tumah, of impurity. What about the yoledet? What about this woman who has given birth makes her fall into the category of impure things? Now, the truth is, the whole concept of purity and impurity is something that's not very well understood. It seems not to be related to either hygiene or lack thereof, nor to sin. So what exactly is it? What makes this woman in childbirth tamei? What makes other things tamei, impure, in general? Nechama Leibowitz, in her Iyunim on the Parsha, in her different discussions on this Parsha, brings a midrash that speaks about the moment of childbirth as one in which a woman recognizes Hashem's greatness and her nothingness in comparison. In that moment when a child is born, it's impossible not to look at and see the grandeur of God. And in seeing what began as almost nothing and has turned into this living being, one feels one's littleness, one's nothingness in comparison to the greatness of God. She points out that there are other places in Tanakh where we see someone feeling this same nothingness compared to God. In the book of Isaiah, when Yeshayahu has a vision of God, he says to himself, "Oh my God, this is God." And he calls himself impure. He says, "I am pure, I am impure, and I stand within an impure nation." Nechama Leibowitz suggests then that perhaps the idea of being impure then is this feeling of nothingness vis-a-vis the greatness of God, a feeling of worthlessness as a human vis-a-vis Hashem. And so she suggests that perhaps that's the whole concept of Tumah. It's not a negative thing. It's just your feeling of being almost nothing, of being dirt and dust. And perhaps at the moment of childbirth, that's one of the moments in life when that recognition comes about in its utmost. Now, the truth is, though this might be a nice concept and might work well for the woman who's bearing a child, it's actually not so clear if such an understanding can be applied to other instances of Tumah, the other instances of the Parsha, of the leper, of the man who has an emission, of other cases in the Parsha beforehand, last week's Parsha. And so I'm not sure that one could definitely take Nechama Leibowitz's approach to Tumah as a whole. Others view Tumah in a very different way. Shadal Shmuel David Lutzato writes in our Parsha, Karov l'inyan ha-mitzora, inyan ha-nida, v'hazav, v'hazav, v'hayoledet. He says, all the different instances in our Parsha, the leper and the menstruating woman and the childbearing woman, all of these are connected. And he says, and how are they all instances of Tumah? What's the common denominator? Ki yitziat hadam o hazera, hi hatchalat mita. He says, what do all these different cases have in common? What do all the different instances of things that we call tamei, impure, have in common? They're all related in some way to death. If one thinks about it, the highest form of impurity is a dead body. So it's logical to associate Tumah somehow with the concept of loss of life. Azav, a man who has an emission, a nida, a person who is menstruating, both are loss of potential life. The mitzora, the leper, is someone who is seen by others as lifeless. But how does this fit with the yoledet? She seems to be the exact opposite. The woman who has just born a child should be the epitome of life, not related to death. So some have suggested that yes, she has just brought forth life, but for her on a personal level, she's actually lost a life. For 9 months, there's been a living being who has been formed inside her. For 9 months, she has felt this life growing. She has felt that baby's first kick, felt his heartbeat. And now that the baby has left her, she has lost a life that had been inside her. Some have even suggested that the double length of impurity that follows bearing a female child might be related to this idea as well, because then there's a double loss of life. The baby itself and that baby's potential for bringing forth more life. So if one takes this concept of Tumah, again, it's not something negative. It's the idea of that when we come in contact with death or potential loss of life, that creates a certain state of being, a state of impurity. Because life is about life, living. And somehow we have to move away from that impurity and move into life again. So the woman who has just born a child, even though she's brought life to the world, if for her there's been a loss of life personally, she has had life taken out of her, she has to undergo this process of purifying herself from impurity. The Netziv, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berliner, without explaining the concept of Tumah, tries to explain, though, why it's necessary for the woman to have this period where she isn't allowed to her husband, have this period where she has to stick away from the temple. And he suggests something that I think is interesting. He connects it to the general laws of Nida, of a woman who's menstruating, and says that the truth is, God has put into the plan of life certain periods where a woman is impure with the goal of making her beloved by her husband. He says sometimes when we have too much closest, if someone is constantly able to be in contact with their husband, never has a period where relations are prohibited, then there's a certain desensitization that comes into the relationship. There's a certain boredom that accompanies the relationship. There's a certain love that's not felt that a period of absence does foster. And so he suggests that every month a woman has this period of time where she's not allowed to her husband, but also after the period of pregnancy, when a woman has been allowed to her husband for an entire 9 months, it's necessary that she has a certain period of impurity where she's not allowed to make the heart grow fonder. So again, that doesn't totally explain the concept of impurity, but suggests a reason why such a period might be necessary in a relationship. So that might help us understand the concept of a woman becoming tamei. It's not negative. But at the same time, there is something in the parsha that suggests there is something negative here, because she has to bring a korban chatat at the end of this period. She has to bring a sin offering. And we ask again, well, what did she sin? What sin did she do by giving birth? So the commentators, many of them ask this question, and they end up dividing basically into two groups. Those that say, yes, she actually sinned, though they debate what exactly was the sin. And those who say, yes, she brings a sin offering, but it's not because of a sin. Let's start with that first category. So already in the Gemara, in Masechet Nida, we read, Sha'alu Tamidav et Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. The students of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai ask him, Mipnei ma'amra Torah yoledet mivya korban. Why in the world did the Torah say that a person who's given birth has to bring a sacrifice? Amar lahen, he answers, B'sha'ah shekorat laled, kofetzet v'nishbat shelo tizakek lebala. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai answers his students, because the truth is, in that long agonizing process of childbirth, when a woman is in much pain, it's very likely that what will happen, she'll swear that she never wants to have relations with her husband again. V'fichach amrat Torah tavi korban. And as a result, the Torah says she has to bring a korban. The Ramban understands this Gemara to be referring to the fact that a woman made an oath that she shouldn't have made, and that the problem is with the oath itself. He says, Ki bavur shehinishbat mitoch tzar, she goes and she swears from her pain. V'ein ha-shvua ruya lehitkayim, but it's a shvua, it's an oath that she didn't really mean to happen afterwards, and that's the problem. Others say that the truth is, it's not really the idea of taking an oath itself in vain that was the problem, but the content of her oath, that it should have even risen to the woman's mind for a minute that she would not want to have relations with her husband. And I think what's interesting about this approach is that it just shows you in Judaism what our attitude towards relations is and to family life, that it's held to be something very positive, something that if a woman for even a moment in the pain of childbirth should suggest to herself, oh, I don't want to have relations, that that's considered a sin, something that she's going to have to atone for by bringing a sacrifice. At the same time, this answer is not particularly satisfying, because not every woman through childbirth makes such an oath. And if so, why should every woman be obligated to go and bring the sin offering? One could say, if you make such an oath, then you have to bring a sin offering. But the pasuk, the verses, suggest that this is something that happens to every woman. Every woman has to bring a sacrifice, even though it's quite likely that many women don't make such a statement in their agonizing hours of labor. Which leads other commentators to search for a different sin that might be what is spoken about or hinted to in the parsha. Abar Bernal tells us, "Hanar'e kefi hapshat, shehayoledet b'mlot yimei tara hayta miviyah b'voal mikdash Hashem korban ule, kedei lehadabek liyotzra asher asah ima lehafli b'hatalata mitzar v'sakanat haleidah. U'mipnei she'ein adam shover alav tzara v'tzukha b'olam hazeh im lo yechata, v'yisalef darko b'ivato. Kam ramzal, ein yisurin b'lo avon, v'hayoledet savla tzara v'sakana b'yotah lavnaim lachin hayta makriba gam kein chatat." But it seems to me, according to the simple sense, that a yoledet, a woman who has just born a child, when she finishes her days of purification, she would bring to the mikdash first a burnt offering, an olah, so that she can cling to her creator that has done wonders with her to save her from pain and from the danger of childbirth. But also, because there's no man who undergoes some type of a distress in this world unless he has sinned, as Chazal say, there's no such thing as suffering without sin. Therefore, the Yoledet, who has undergone some type of danger and distress, she too must bring a chatat. Abar Bernal here is pointing to two things. He notes that there's two different sacrifices that the woman must bring after her period of purification, both an olah and a chatat. The olah, he says, is coming due to mainly some type of a thanksgiving to God, a desire to cling to Hashem who has just saved you from the dangers of childbirth. The chatat, though, he says, comes because there's a concept that there's no such thing as suffering without there being a reason for it, without sin. And thus, if a woman has undergone suffering during childbirth, it must mean that at some point in her past, she sinned. Even if she's not aware of what the sin was, the fact that she suffered meant that there has to be sin. Now, this is actually quite a difficult concept for many to, I think, agree with. I don't know if it's so easy to say that all suffering in the world means that there has been some sin. And the truth is, in other places, the Abarbanel himself doesn't seem to agree with this concept. But here, he does seem to suggest that if there's suffering, that means there must be sin. Just like if there's smoke, there must be fire. Again, though, I think that's a very difficult thing to say. And it's very hard to say that every single woman is going to go and bring a sacrifice right now because she must have sinned. Because the truth is, almost everybody suffers at some point in the world, and we don't tell every single person every time they suffer, oh, anytime that there's something negative in your life, go bring a sin offering. You must have done something wrong. It seems to me quite a difficult thing to say. And so we'll look at another approach, the approach of Rabbeinu Bachya. He says, after tells us that she brings a chatat, the pasuk tells us, v'chiper aleha, and will atone for her. In lashon kapara nofel ki imachet, he says, this language alone must tell you that this sin offering must be because of a sin, because otherwise it wouldn't tell you that she needs atonement. Ulefichach korban zeh sheyoledet mechudash kekorban hanazir. And he says, but that means that this sacrifice of the yoledet is as strange as the sacrifice of the nazir. Why is he comparing the two? Because in both cases, machat'a bizman haleda, we're not sure what was the sin of the person who has to bring the sacrifice. And if this sacrifice was coming as a result of the fact that she had been in danger and now she was saved, she shouldn't bring a sacrifice that's for sin, but rather she should bring a korban todah, thanksgiving sacrifice. Why is she bringing the sin offering? And so he suggests something that sounds a little bit radical on one level, that she's bringing this korban not because of her own sin, but because of the sin of the first mother, Im Kol Chai, the mother of all living things. In other words, the sin of Chava, the sin of Eve. Kilulei hachet hahu, haya ha'adam molidi mishto shelo b'derach tava v'cheshach, ela b'derach ha'tava ha'gemor. He says, because had it not been for that sin, people would bring forth children into this world, not because of desire, but rather in a totally natural way. And he says, and this sin of the first mother of Chava seems to extend down through the generations. I find this explanation also somewhat problematic. I find it very hard to say. We don't generally think of in Judaism that we're tainted by the first sin, by the sin of Eve, to say that every single woman has to bring a korban chatat. Yes, is it true that every woman to some extent is being punished because of Eve? Yes. She was told that as a result of her actions in Gan Eden, by taking of the fruit, she was going to have pain in childbirth and everyone thereafter has pain in childbirth. But I'm not so sure that it's easy to then go and say, and every woman is also sharing in the sin itself. And so let's move from here to our second category of commentators who don't really view the sin offering as coming because of sin. Shadal, in a continuation of what we read from him beforehand, says, the truth is, when we bring a sin offering here, it's not really because the woman has sinned, but rather, it's because it's the process of all purifications. He says, if you look at the other instances of impurity in this parsha, the instances of the zav, the instances of the mitzvah, of the leper, of the person who has emissions, etc., all of them have to go and bring a korban olah, a burnt offering, and a korban chatat. and that one should look at this as much more of a technical type of thing. This is just how the process of purity and impurity works in Torah. In order to get from an impure state to a pure state, one has to bring these different things. In none of the cases, though, do we have to see the person as having sinned, and that it's possible to have a sin offering, which isn't really for sin. Rav David Tzvi Hoffman also goes in the line of the idea that this is related to the fact that this is part of the tahara process, part of the purification process, but in a very different way. He points out that a woman became tameh, a woman became impure in the act of giving birth, not because she did something wrong, but because that's what happens when you give birth, as we talked about before, and perhaps because it's related to a loss of life. But that as a result of that status of impurity, this woman was not allowed into the temple. And he says, "Ule korban chatat muvayuna." The animal that she brings as her korban chatat is a pigeon. Mishum she'ne'altza l'hitrachek zman rav min hamikdash. And he says, and why does she have to bring a chatat? Because as a result of her impurity, she was forced to be away from the mikdash, away from the temple, for a long period of time. Asheri lavhi nechneset achshav, and now when she's finally able to come back, she comes back mle'at gaguim, full of longing, ki yona she'shava l'rubata, just like a pigeon who comes home, kedei l'tkarev el elokeh, in order to come close to God. Rav David Tzvi Hoffman points to a very interesting idea, I think. He says, the result of being impure, even though it was of no fault of your own, meant that you were not in contact with God. You weren't able to come into the temple. There was a certain distance that was created between you and God by virtue of the fact that you were unable to come into the Mikdash, into the temple. And he says, and that is not necessarily a sinful act. He doesn't view it as a sin at all, but it's something that's negative. It's something that is a state that we don't hold up as the ideal. The ideal would be that everyone can come close to God all the time. And so this woman, upon being able to come back, wants to bring us back to the ideal. How do you get back to the ideal? By bringing a sin offering. Okay? The sin offering thus seems to represent a way of pointing out that whatever was happening until now was not the ideal form. Now we're moving back into what is the ideal, and we mark that transition by bringing a sin offering. And he points out something which I thought was very interesting, that out of all animals that we choose in this case to bring as a sin offering, it's a yonah. And he says that has to do with the characteristics of a pigeon that we know. Pigeons can always find their way back home. When you send one off, its longing for home means it can always find its way back. And so the woman symbolically brings this pigeon, representing her longing for what she's missed. That period of time when she wasn't as close to God as she would have wanted. So now she too, like the pigeon, comes back home and brings with her a pigeon as a sacrifice. For me, this was perhaps the most compelling of the different approaches, where the message perhaps of Rav David Tzvi Hoffman is that life, even sometimes in its most happy moments, as a byproduct, sometimes creates not necessarily the best conditions or the ideal circumstances. And that throughout life, again, even when things are happy, sometimes a situation is created which isn't the ideal. And that when we're able to correct that, in this case, the idea of not being close to God, we go and we make some type of a transition ceremony back into what is the ideal. And to recognize that that doesn't mean necessarily that you did something wrong. In this case, the yoledet is not necessarily someone who has sinned. Tum'ah is not something that's considered that she did wrong. But sometimes that good things have to be accompanied by a certain status that might be seen by others as negative or less than ideal. But that there's always a way back. And like that pigeon, we can all come back home at the end of the day. With that, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Nema. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.